bit of a second. What's going on down here in terms of, oh, I don't know, the shorthand for it is economic inequality. What's going on down here? People's homes lost, people's educations unable, impossible to be paid for. And so as a demonstration of their unease, their anger, their frustration at not being given the advertised opportunity to participate in the American dream nightmare, people have been going to the little park on the outskirts of the financial district, Zuccotti Park, rechristened Liberty Park, and, you know, talking to each other, making signs, sleeping, eating, and trying to establish something like community. When I was a windy boy in a bit, trying to make sense of the world, I came across the works of Paul Goodman. And I read a little bit about the necessity for community. I mention that because there's going to be a movie about the life of Paul Goodman and how he changed the lives of many people that we'll be talking about on Radio Enable next week, I believe. But community, where somebody sets up a table so that all of the donated food can be distributed. That's community. It's one person taking a little thought and effort for the well-being of someone else. There was a sign that I saw quoted many, many times. We really care about you. People have been saying to the police who have been piling up some overtime because of this, you're only one layoff away from being here with us. We have some presidential candidate who's one of those 99 and niners who talks about all of the nines. And he says that we don't really need Social Security, Medicare, unemployment insurance, probably even public works. You want to go someplace, build your own road. Build the road by walking, they say. Well, in the midst of all of this turmoil, WBAI is trying very hard to give you the true, the emis, the truth, the absolute real story. Not something that's virtual, composed of the prejudices and the fears of the likes of Hannity and Limbaugh. And for 50-some years, people have appreciated that enough to support WBAI, to get something for their money, rather than nothing for the money that accrues to the people who sell advertising time on other radio stations. Now, you're listening to WBAI, so you probably know all this stuff. But you also probably should be reminded that there are times when the landlord's got to be paid The phone bill has got to be paid. The electrical bill has got to be paid. And even the pitiful staff salaries have got to be paid. And we ask you, please, we ask you with every iota of our being to be generous in supporting something that, well, something that you need. So please, call 212-209-2950 and pledge just a simple token amount, $5 for a year's worth of radio, $10, a dollar a month. Pledge that amount. We have a variety of interesting and amazing, in some cases, premiums that we will offer to you. I don't know whether we have a monogrammed cup or a tote bag or a WBAI t-shirt, but in the past we have had things of that sort, and there are videotapes, there are opportunities to get computer information, and we're trying very hard to keep WBAI alive and healthy. And it would be wonderful if just one of you could get up and go to a telephone right now. I will know instantly because of something that used to be called the Adelometer. But I will know instantly if the phone rings. Sometimes there actually is a bell, a telephone sounding bell that rings on the air. But right now, not now. Right now, it's up to you to start this off, to go to your telephone, to even if you have to disentangle yourself from the radio or get up from the place where you're sitting or pull over to the side of the road and call and pledge a small amount in support of WBAI. There's a call now of someone who's calling on the airline, but that's not the number that we want to call. That's not the number. Perhaps we'll be taking calls on the air soon. I'm going to be talking to Paul Krasner this morning, among others, and I'm going to be talking to Paul Krasner because of something that he and I did in the good old Yippie days together. Really at the urging and the direct, and well, yeah, I guess it was at the urging. We urge you to call 212-209-2950 and pledge $10 to support WBAI. $25 makes you a full member and makes you eligible to vote in our elections. Tell you what, why don't you call a few times during the course of the morning when you hear something that you feel, you know, broadens your view of the cosmos, something that tickles your funny bone, something that illuminates the night for you, give us a call, 212-209-2950. Call that number and pledge your support. Do it a few times during the night. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950.
Train whistling home in the dark, Christmas lights up in the trailer park, and across the highway, an American shop. There is a quiet dignity, there is a quiet dignity. Yard's tiny and clean, so smart enough to just fall right through the American dream. Year of the billion-dollar bailout, neighborhood of the graveyard shift, just a few blocks back behind the dealership. So hard to change. You know it used to snow here, now it only rains. I can barely hear you over these machines. Turn them all off and tell me about your dreams. Driving south from New York City, past Our Lady of Liberty, toward the strange glow of the factories. When I hear the silence in my life, but I bought all these tools to save time. Well, if they save so much, then where's all mine? And all these things feel so hard to change. You know it used to snow here, and now it only rains. I can barely hear you over these machines. Turn them all off and tell me about your dreams. Wanna be Wanna be your old friend. Don't wanna make the same mistakes that my parents did. And all these things feel so hard to change. You know it used to snow here, and now it only rains. I can barely hear you.
Oh, no. I walk down to the railroad yard to watch that train roll by. I knew the train would roll that day, but I did not know what time. I did not know what time, poor boy, did not know what time. I knew the train would roll that day, but I did not know what time. Good morning, Mr. Railroad Man, what time your train roll by? 9:16 and 2:44, 25 minutes till 5. At 9:16 and 2:44, 25 minutes till 5. Thank you, Mr. Railroad Man, watch your train roll by. On a platform, smoking a big cigar, waiting for some old freight train. There is an empty car. I rode her down to Danville town, got struck on a Danville girl. You bet your life she was a pearl, she wore that Danville curl. She wore her hat on the back of her head, like high-toned people all do. The very next train come down that track, I bid that gal adieu. Ding-o, ding, ho, 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 ho.
No way to give. of an alarm. There were mothers waiting in the water with their babies in their arms. Let us all get right with our Maker as He do of all things well, and be ready to meet in judgment when we bid this earth farewell.
As I said, it was Emmett Grogan's suggestion. Emmett was the leading light of a group called the San Francisco Diggers. He had a program where people who were living in a park got fed, and he had a little theatrical trick that he did of burning dollar bills, which was kind of liberating to see. It was such a strange thing, but his feeling about how to start a community, how to get a community together, were pretty advanced, I thought. And Emmett said, the Lower East Side, that's the place you yippies seem to think you're from. Actually, it's not where you're from. It's where everybody who's ever come to New York poor is from or has been from. It's kind of a shoot into the rest of the American dream. People come there and huddle in fairly inexpensive, not any longer, apartments. And, they plot and they plan and they work. And they exchange ideas and they brush up against the law, and they try to even organize and change the law and protect themselves and and develop a culture, and has been an important feeder of the dream of the United States. Poets, philosophers, performers, musicians, all go through the Lower East Side. But Emmett Grogan looked at it and said, it's filthy. I said, yeah, the Department of Sanitation doesn't really do a very serious job about cleaning up this neighborhood. And Emmett said, well, the same was true where I came from, but what we did was clean it up ourselves. I said, how are we going to do that? He said, organize people, let them to go down and clean it up themselves. And so for a week or two on the radio, Paul and I and other people talked about something that we called a sweep-in. And people called up and said, hey, I can bring in 10 mops. Somebody else said, all right, I have some scouring powder in a case, and the people made all kinds of promises. And on the morning that we had scheduled, between the time that we had a rendezvous with the brooms and bucket brigade, we had been summoned to a meeting at the mayor's office. John Lindsay was the mayor then, and we met with John Lindsay and his commissioner of sanitation. The commissioner of sanitation said, Are you trying to show up the Department of Sanitation? Are you trying to make us look unsavory? And, you know, we kind of said, well, we're going to do it. And lo and behold, the night before the event took place, the Department of Sanitation trucks lined up on the street that we had selected and really did a thoroughly convincing job of cleaning up that one street. And there were the next morning all these people who came from all parts of the city, all parts of the broadcast area of WBAI, and they had these mops and buckets. They said, gee, it's not as though there isn't another dirty block on the Lower East Side. Let's clean up the next block. Let's clean up the block after that. And people did that. And for a brief moment or two, the Lower East Side was sparkling clean. And now we have Mayor Blooming Idiot, who was saying we've got to exercise sanitation in the park, Zuccotti Park, Liberty Park, where people have been living. Now, the park is named for some temporary flash across the New York City sky, some politician who was revealed to be you know, a typical scoundrel, and I don't know whether he ended up in jail or not, but the park belonged to the city, I believe, and it was bought by some real estate company, and they promised to keep it open as a park in order to get some other concession from the city, some right to build a office building or some other kind of building, I don't know, some kind of development of cement. So that was the place that the occupiers of Wall Street decided would be the place to have their demonstration. And after about a month of living there, the cement is getting as sticky as the floor of a porn palace. It's you know, it isn't just chewing gum, and it's feet, and it's breathing in and out, and it probably could stand a good washing down. But as far as I know, the people who have been occupying the park in an effort to call attention to the fact that the economic situation is particularly hard on 99% of the population, and while there is unparalleled prosperity among the other 1%, it's getting hard to maintain a house. It's getting hard to buy gas. It's getting hard to send your dreams to college. It's tough to raise a family. And these are the things that we had been told we would be allowed and encouraged to do if we let the Bushes dream of owning all of the oil, if not all of the assets of the world. And I don't know whether President Bush is actually responsible for the economic meltdown. I think it's probably more likely that his deregulation made it possible, and his very cozy relationship, which has continued under our present heroic president, cozy relationship with banking interests, is making things worse than they have to be. And people asked for contributions of cleaning materials. I heard that. And I thought, hey, this is one of those times where it pays off to be an old guy, because you've seen things happen before. And you have a feeling of how they can turn out and leave everybody feeling pretty good. But I don't think that's going to happen. The protesters, the demonstrators, have said that they are going to insist that the park be cleared in sections, that one phase of the cleaning can take place and then another phase of the cleaning can take place, and the park doesn't have to be cleared. It can just be sort of sidled over the way you lift a piece of furniture if you want to sweep under it. Wait a minute, let me put your mic on.
Oh, a subway platform.
Right. Is that the way they handle the subway?
Yeah, as they come down the platform, you kind of get out of their way and they don't try to bum rush you. And
That's why the subways are so sparkling clean.
Well, relatively speaking.
Well, you know, the mayor is clearly preparing a pretext for evacuating the park, and sure. Commissioner Kelly has said that when people are permitted to go back to the park, they'll be not allowed to bring any pads or sleeping bags or anything to, and they're not even going to be permitted to lie down. They can stand there if they want, he said. But
not quite a democracy pen, but the next best thing. Just keep them all in one spot.
Right, and they it's quite clear that they're going to have to do some scrubbing to get rid of the pepper spray that's on.
Well, right now there's a torrential rain going on. There was when you came on the air. Just as I got here, it just started coming down in buckets.
Uh-huh.
So,
that itself is going to clean the streets, right?
They can call this whole thing off now.
Right.
They can put the horses back in the trucks. I saw them unloading on Spruce Street.
Horses?
The cavalry has arrived, yeah.
Oh.
A good dozen of them were already unloaded as the rain started to come down.
What are they going to arrest the horses if they defecate on the sidewalk?
Well, Teddy Roosevelt was a police commissioner of New York at one time.
Do the police pick up after their horses the way the people who own dogs are encouraged to?
They're omitted from the EPA guidelines. They don't have to shovel their own, you know what.
Well, so what is likely to happen this morning, you think?
A lot of people are going to run into a lot of other people. Whether it's peacefully or confrontationally remains to be seen.
I saw an awful lot of people around the area, you know, not necessarily in Zuccotti Park, but different streets down in the Wall Street Lower Financial area.
I just happened to notice going down Fulton Street towards the Brooklyn Bridge how it seemed like every traffic light, there was a cop car with his motor running, lights were off, just kind of sitting there waiting for the call. So we'll see what sunrise brings. Hopefully cooler heads and maybe a modified and orderly cleanup without any pretense for, you know, an actual push. But they did that in Boston a couple of days ago, and it was resolved peacefully, I believe. Maybe somebody knows more about that can call in. But it's too big to fail, even if it's pushed out of the park right now at this point, you know.
Thousands of cities.
Yeah, yeah.
I heard about an Occupy Sonoma, California, that's planned for the weekend.
Occupy the bottle, the wine bottle. Wonderful times of living through.
Krasner is on the line with us now. Paul, good morning.
Hiya, good morning. I'm on the line, yes.
Well, you were telling me that you had just finished writing something comparing the occupiers to the yippies.
No, I hadn't. I hadn't written it yet. I'm still thinking about it. I'm a slow writer.
Well, what are your ideas so far?
You mean in terms of
similarities, differences, distances?
Oh yeah. Well,
derivation.
For one thing, I think the yippies were essentially countercultural, and I think the mostly young people that I've seen online and on TV. I'm not saying they're not mainstream, or I think in terms of, but they're being treated as if they're dirty hippies in at least on Fox TV news, so to speak. One of the differences, I think the yippies had just a few spokespeople as liaisons to the media, and it was essentially Abby Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, and me, and you were the most used media because you were part of the community. Now one of the different aspects is that when the Yippies were formed, they didn't exist yet. I mean, they existed, they just didn't know they were Yippies. And so we had to manipulate the media, you know, with all tricks, whether it was, you know, the lace that Abby had invented with, it's supposed to be a combination of LSD and DMSO and would automatically act as a aphrodisiac. And they had a demonstration in Abby and Anita Hoffman's apartment on the Lower East Side. And there were three couples who were going to get sprayed with this lace, which was really Shapiro's Disappearo from China or somewhere. And
is that a Chinese name?
No, might have been Thailand. I forget that particular detail. But in any case, and this was in order to get publicity, free publicity for the event that was going to occur. This was in October 1967 at the Pentagon, and it was announced that lace would be sprayed on the police and the National Guard at the Pentagon.
Don't ask, don't tell.
It wasn't quite. No, it was really a gender-free act. You know, they had a meeting with the Pentagon, and you know, people at the Pentagon said, "Well, you know, you can't raise it more than 22 feet because that's how high our ladders go." And then they agreed to. They compromised and did it for 3 feet so that they could pull it down without having to stand on ladders. And it was all a big joke, but it was to make a point and to let people know that there was going to be these demonstrations against the Vietnam War. So it was a myth, and it became a reality. And this is, and in contrast, the Occupy Wall Street folks were a reality before it became a myth, you know. And I knew, I predicted, I said, you know, they're not, the mainstream media aren't reporting on them, but I'm old-fashioned. I still think of media as plural. That the media would take the occupiers seriously when there was some violence. And sure enough, that's when it happened, when those police in the white shirts were just being brutal with pepper spray and with their billy clubs. So that's another contrast. But there are links, you know, when the Yippies went to the stock market and threw, I think it was $200 in singles, they were up on the balcony and threw it onto the floor of the stock market. And all of a sudden, all these people who were, you know, dealt in the abstract, you know, just yelling out things, you know, pork bellies, pork bellies. And they suddenly changed to diving for dollars. These were actual dollar bills suddenly became their priority. And so then, outside of the stock market, we held a press conference and explained the connection between Wall Street and the war in Vietnam. And
well,
so
this was somehow better than what Emmett Grogan was doing, which was to burn money. Remember, burning dollar bills was also another symbol.
But it was a symbol, you know, to see how many millions and millions of dollars were being burned by just invading Vietnam. So, you know, it was also making a point. But and everybody has their own artistic path. But and so now, you know, I have a strong sense of continuity about the Wall Street occupation, because it's the same principle, you know, except, and when, you know, when 700 people got arrested on the Brooklyn Bridge, they could have at least arrested four or five hedge fund people, you know, just to kind of get fair and unbalanced arrests going.
Well, the people who were arrested on the bridge were kind of trapped entrapped. They were told to go up a certain way, and then when they got up on a certain way, they were surrounded.
Yeah, I think
it was sort of, you know, this is a bizarre simile, but it made me think of giving giving the people who were going into the gas chamber a bar of soap, you know, and being told it's really showers.
Well, oh yeah, no, but it's a tactic that's quite consciously, at least as one of the byproducts, making people afraid to participate in demonstrations. There's one other thing. One of the big criticisms of the occupiers is they don't have a plan. They don't have demands. They don't, you know.
That's exactly what they said about the yippies.
Well, yeah. And then Abbie Hoffman and I were on the CBS Evening News. They interviewed us at his home. And you know, they asked Abbie, well, what is it that you want? And he quoted Che Guevara said, in a revolution, one wins or dies. So that didn't get on Walter Cronkite's show. and then they asked me, well, what is it that you want to do in Chicago, meaning the Chicago summer of 68 when the Democratic Convention was being held? And even though the war was bipartisan, as is the current wars going on, we just happened to be, it was under the Democratic watch at that particular time. And as Abbie said, you know, the Republicans were having theirs in Miami, and he said, who wants to go there during the off season? When I was asked by the reporter, I forget her name, but you know, then it would look like Walter Cronkite, because I said, when she asked, what are you going to do there? I said, you know, with a kind of silly smirk, I said, you think I'm going to tell you? And then I added, well, the first thing we're going to do is to put truth serum in the reporters' drinks. And so we watched the news on CBS that evening, and there was Abbie's comment about win or die in the revolution, left out, and then came on the last thing on the program, was Cronkite saying something like, well, what are the yippies going to do? You know, not as if he was asking me, but it was like a rhetorical question. And then my face came on the screen saying, you think I'm going to tell you? And it ended there. It didn't have me saying, we're going to put truth serum in the reporters' drinks. So, you know, I was fooled by my own game. But anyway, the thing is there.
I don't think it was such a great loss, Paul. I think, in a way, you were telling the absolute truth. Not only did you not know yourself, but the reporters, you know, would not have understood. And it was, you know, the great thing about this demonstration has been that, because they haven't announced a particular plan, people are coming up with their own plans. And they're, well, obviously it's because of, and then people are, you know, saying things like Steve Benisrael's famous line, there's nothing wrong with capitalism except the side effects.
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's a myth. Then the yippies did have many demands, and there were specific things to end the war and
well, I remember the demands were a combination of things that we were really serious about, like ending the war, and that were, you know, just a couple of other things that were put on top, like, I don't know, like whipped cream on a Charlotte Russe, end pay bathrooms. Do you remember that?
Oh, but yeah, but they weren't in the same list. I'm talking about the, you know, the, aside from the jokes, there were serious, you know, legalization of marijuana, racism, poverty. There were, you know, I could think of maybe a dozen causes. Now I can think of maybe 100 causes. You know, so we've gone from we shall overcome to we shall overlap. And so it's, and also the, you know, there have been people who have articulated what the occupiers are doing. One was Elizabeth Warren.
Bernie Sanders as well.
Bernie Sanders.
Terry
Alan, Riley. Alan, Alan Grayson on the Bill Maher's show. But, and in fact, Keith Olbermann on the Al Gore's channel, Current, read a list of the demands of the occupiers. So it's, you know, it's a myth that they don't have demands. But another thing that's that's like linear in terms was that the yippies were... they always tried to get the, you know, the weirdest people, and so they would get people like a fellow who was turned out to be an FBI informant and provocateur. And they've had provocateurs now. The people at the museum in Washington, when there was pepper spray, the pepper spray, it was acting to provocation by a guy who was the editor of a conservative periodical. So, you know, the tactics are saying it are the same on both sides of the battle. It is, but the technology is different. You know, these things are organized. We had to use mimeograph machines and get ink on our hands, and then get print these flyers and then mail them to a bunch of people. Now, you know, the internet has changed the way protests are organized, and you, without having to pay for stamps and envelopes.
Have you heard about the human microphones?
You mean where everybody repeats what was said?
Everyone repeats what was said.
By an individual?
By an individual.
Yeah. Oh, no. That's kind of inspiring.
That's kind of inspiring. It's,
but, it, you know, it's sort of like a congregational response in churches where they do that. But it's a little bit sad that they have to do that, you know, because that could be just as loud as the bullhorn or the PA system. But, you know, they're trying to clamp down on this because you know, when Obama first got elected and he was in the park in Chicago, the same park where they had what was officially labeled as a police riot at the 68 convention. And so I'm concerned about what's going to happen tomorrow morning. I was listening in just before you called, and I heard, I didn't get his name, speaking about that he
Gary
saw the
Davidson.
Horses, huh?
Gary Davidson.
Ah. Well, I heard him speaking about that he saw horses ready, so they're bringing in the cavalry. Mm. And, you know, it's like they're preparing for a riot, and it's something to be concerned about. I saw them. I don't know. You know, the guy who owns the park, he might have decided on his own, but I'm sure he was pressured by authorities to evict them. So then they would have an excuse to arrest them if they didn't leave.
Well, he said that there were complaints about the sanitation,
Mayor
Bloomberg was down there,
and
he complained about it as well. I don't know. I can remember that this area of New York City was massively infected with rats at one point. And,
right, but they were conservative rats.
Yes, yes, they all are, aren't they?
I don't want to generalize. I saw on one of the newses that there were people there scrubbing down. And it gave me a flashback to 1967, I think it was.
The sweep-in.
Yeah.
Do you remember that people brought brooms and mops and just set to work? Even Mr. Clean appeared. Do you remember that? This guy who appears in all of the ads for some cleaning product. He was down there with a truck giving out these products and encouraging people to use them on the street.
I'm trying to remember what the motivation was. We didn't want to wait for the sanitation department to clean it because they hadn't done it yet. And then I lived in that neighborhood. I think it was on 6th or 7th Street, something like that. I lived on Avenue A between 6th and 7th. And I think I was walking home for something, and I saw that the sanitation department was cleaning the street that we had announced we would clean the next afternoon. And so, as I recall, I might be wrong, but my recollection is that I called you. You might have been on the air to tell you that the sanitation department was trying to beat us to the punch. And so we changed it to another street that we were going to clean. Is that how you remember it?
Yes, pretty much. Pretty much.
And I had rented the Village Theater, which later became Fillmore East, to do a show, a benefit. I forget. It might have been End the Draft or something like that. And I decided to just give away the tickets to people on the street who were cleaning it up. A free celebration. But they had to go to the box office with their ticket before they would be let in, just because when I rented it, it included a payment for the box office person. And so it was great because people were really exhausted from the sweep-in, and so it was like putting on a show. And a couple of street people, panhandlers, asked for tickets when I was giving them out, so I gave them, and they both sat in the audience and were having, it became part of the performance because they were like the two guys in Waiting for Godot having their own dialogue in the audience. So that became part of the flow. But there is that element of somebody on Fox said, well, what do you think is necessary? And she said, well, it's necessary for them to take a bath. You know, it's always been that way. I was on the Merv Griffin show once. Orson Bean was the guest host, and Jackie Vernon was one of the guests. He was a kind of heavy set comedian who was very deadpan and just spoke in a monotone. And so at one point, I was wearing my Mexican cowboy hat that Abby had given me. And suddenly he says to me, Jackie Vernon does, he says, why don't you take a bath? And I was, you know, he caught me by off guard because this was on syndicated or network TV, and before I could answer, another guest was Otto Preminger, and he said, "That's what Nazi Germany was like with all this stereotyping," and they went to commercial. And I felt it was much better for it to come from him than from me. And the next day, I had a Monday morning quarterback session with George Carlin, and he said, "You should have said, 'You're right, Jackie, I'll take a bath as soon as I go home.'" You know, because he has that ability to disarm. But again, there is that continuation that you can see there. It's like 60s bashing, 50 years later.
Well, the difference, there is a difference, though, in the way this particular mayor has organized the city and the way John Lindsay organized the city. You know, a difference between fun city and, I don't know what Bloomberg's motto is, but it's not fun.
Oh, his motto is keep voting for me.
Mm. Right.
There's no term limits there, huh?
Well, they voted the term limits out so that they could vote Bloomberg in. But what I understood is that tomorrow there are going to be circles of protection around the parts of the park that aren't being cleaned. And people who will be participating in these circles of protection include members of the New York City Council.
Well, that's interesting. I think that kind of support is very significant. It's scary and it's real. You know, it's like there's no script.
Speaking of no script and being scary and real, this is WBAI in New York City, and I would like to remind the people who are listening that someone has got to pay for this broadcast, and it could just as easily be you as is not. And if you call 209-2950, area code 212-209-2950, you can make a contribution so that we can continue to bring you people like Paul Krasner. 212-209-2950. Paul Krasner was my very first guest on the radio 50 years ago. And he's always had something creative and amusing, satiric and cuttingly correct to say about what was going on and about the humanity or lack of humanity in our existence. You were a friend, as I understand, of Paul Goodman. Is that true, Paul?
Oh, I didn't know him well. I met him a couple of times, always wanted to correct the grammar of his book, Growing Up Absurd. I told him it should be Growing Up Absurdly. I had a lot of respect and admiration for him. He was ahead of his time in terms of, education reform. Anyway, what about, did you bring him up for a reason?
Well, yes, there's a film that's going to be, I hope, featured here next week about Paul Goodman and how he has contributed to a lot of our contemporary fantasies about the world we want to live in. Paul Goodman was an out homosexual in a time when it was actually literally dangerous to be a homosexual and to have that fact known. He was a campaigner against the war. He was a lecturer in colleges. He wrote books about Gestalt philosophy. And, you know, I think he's one of those people who created a whole culture. He was a member of...
a documentary about him that's going
to... Right, and...
Well, I
don't know. I don't... I suppose so. I don't know too much about it. But there's probably a website that describes it.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Well, I hear a telephone ringing. Could that be that someone's trying to call on the air? Or are they trying to pledge their support? It's the tally room calling, maybe. But why don't you try being a human microphone for that call, Bill, and repeat it. Remember when we first started taking telephone calls, that's what we did? Someone would call up and say, hello, Paul? And, of course, we didn't have a way of putting the telephone call on the air at that time, so we would actually repeat what they had to say, like the human microphone.
Oh, yes, 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 that's right, that's right. BT, before technology.
Before the delay.
Yeah.
Everything was so much more immediate. Who was the caller, Bill?
Yes, well, there are two people who were coming over from Zuccotti Park. They have something to report on, I suppose. I said, sure. I think we're expecting somebody, right?
Yes, so far as I know, I hope that someone will be able to let them pass the...
They're going to be put in the system
right.
database.
Well, maybe they could just call up and someone can go down when they get here. I don't know who they are. Do they? We have their names?
Whoever called from the pledge room has that. They'll take care of it. So.
I see. That's Andrew in the pledge room. And he's waiting to hear from people, and so are we. 212-209-2950.
Oh,
is there a call now coming into that number? 212-209-2950. If you're outside of New York City and you're listening on the internet, trying to find out what's happening in Zuccotti Park or trying to find out what's happening in the world, this is the place that people tune to along the internet. We get calls from California. We get calls from as far away as New Mexico. And we may get some this morning. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. That's the number. Subscriptions to WBAI can be had for $25. Less than that can be contributed to help keep us going. And we've been doing this for 50 years. For the first, 20 years or so, you gave copies, you gave subscriptions to the Realist to people who subscribed to WBAI, Paul. That was a wonderful inducement. And the news is that I've heard, don't know where I've heard it, probably from you, that you're going to be writing an article in The Nation. Is that true?
Oh, there's going to be two pieces coming out in November. One is November will mark the 10th anniversary of Ken Kesey's death. So so I have a piece called Adventures with Kesey coming up in The Nation. And then later that same month in November in Playboy, I have they're publishing a... in quotes, dialogue I had with Andrew Breitbart, the right-wing propagandist. So,
how quickly we forget.
Is this a real dialogue or a fantasy dialogue?
Well, no, it's a real dialogue.
Okay.
But you know, he's... but from his point of view, it was monologues. You know, he was... I was putting him on the defense a lot, and at the end of it, when I said, "Well, thank you for this," he said, "I thought it would be funnier," even though there was a lot of fun in it, and in terms of that he was influenced, he said, by me and Abby and Kesey. Not that he agreed with the positions we took, because they're totally on the opposite ends of the cultural spectrum, but he liked the idea that we got away with it, and he was inspired to get away with stuff. As he did with Shirley Sherrod, and then the administration was so chicken that they fired her without even investigating what it was. But she's suing him, and for slander, I think it was, or for deliberate, I don't know the specific details. But anyway, it's already set in print, but I would like to have asked him what he thought about Occupy Wall Street. He's a defender of the Tea Party.
Right. Well, that would be good to have him say that. But, you know, I thought of a rejoinder that you could have used when he said, "I thought it would be funnier. I thought you would be brighter."
I thought I'd give him the last word. It was funny. It was so funny because, it made me do a double take when he said that. Because I gave him a lot of room to reveal himself and what his goals are, and he rationalizes. I'll give you one example. I was mentioning in some context the assassination, the double assassination of San Francisco Mayor George Moscone, who was very progressive, and Supervisor Harvey Milk, who was one of the first openly gay elected officials, if not the first. And they were killed by a former policeman, Dan White, and he interrupted me and he said, Dan White was a Democrat, and Harvey Milk was a libertarian. And I just said, well, I'll put those labels aside for the moment and continue what I was saying. But, what was the theme that ran throughout the dialogue was the fact that people perceive the truth through the prism of their agenda. And that was a good example of it, to see how people rationalize. And so it gets so predictable, if you're watching, let's say, MSNBC and Fox, you pretty much know what position they're going to take and what they're going to escalate into something important, which is just, maybe a simple little meaningless gaffe. So, but they look for the gaffe. They look for something that they can twist around and spin, just the way TSA at the airports, when they're doing their security jobs, the one who has to look at all of the luggage going along the conveyor belt and look at the screen, and they're looking for something: a gun, a hand grenade, a rifle. That's the focus. And it's just a kind of an analogy of how people's perception can focus on something. It's like the FedEx logo. Between the E and the X is a space that is a perfect arrow, and I'm sure it was designed deliberately by graphic designers. But once you see that, now, for me at least, that's the first thing I see when a FedEx truck passes. I say, oh, there's that arrow in there. So, it can change. It's like Dennis Miller, who is not exactly my favorite comedian, but he did once have an image that stayed with me, which is when Janet Reno, he compared her to John Lithgow in The World According to Garp when he was in drag, but he was big and gangly. So images can really change perception, whether it was Boss Tweed, when they had him in the editorial cartoon, they had him as a vulture, a perched.
Mm.
And that just stayed, that image of him, because it revealed what people really thought of him. And later on, when there was that image when Harry Truman was running against Thomas Dewey, and Dewey had his hair parted kind of in the middle. He looked like that actor, Rain, I forget his first name, but who has his hair parted in the middle and then coming down on the sides. And Thomas Dewey had this little mustache, and somebody said...
Dorothy Parker said he looked like the groom on the wedding cake.
Right, Dorothy Parker said that, right. And that image stayed, and it played some part in his losing the election. Just as what was his name? Dukakis was riding in the tank with that funny helmet on. Mm. That image had something to do with his losing.
Well, images are really vitally important. And every time we went to a demonstration against the war or against some other brutality, we would come back and we would, hover by the television set and watch to see which moment, which fractional moment was going to be reported. And then suddenly there were porta-packs. And people like Nancy Kane and the Video Freaks began to go to demonstrations and make long documentary-style videos of the events. And people began to see more of what was going on, what was actually going on. And
well, that was why in 68, when the Yippies nominated a pig for the president named Pigasus, and there was an actual live pig brought to City Hall, and here's a real sense of continuity in the Occupy Seattle demonstration. There's a fellow named Michael Dare who inspired by the Yippies running a pig for president, is also using satire as a weapon, as a nonviolent weapon, because he said, making the point that if a corporation is a person, then he wants to run a corporation for president.
I heard someone said, "I will believe that a corporation is an individual when Texas executes one."
Yeah. Just today, right.
Yeah, that's a variation on that theme.
Yeah.
But, he was undecided whether he should run, an evil corporation like GE or the Koch brothers or Merck Pharmacies. There's so many. Or to pick one that, has a slogan, "Do no evil," or "Be not evil," whatever it is that Google has, and the fact that they have not taken off Google the definition of Santorum, which comes on at the same time that Rick Santorum, they're the first two definitions, and it's really a very, very raunchy, creative, scatological definition of his name, and but they left it on, and I'm sure there was pressure to them to try and take it off. So So he thought maybe it would be interesting to have vote for President Google. It's a great, great sounding name. You know, I said, okay, I'll be the Secretary of Greed. And but so there is a sense of humor that is always one of the saving graces of any process like that.
Well, Paul, we've just gotten a delegation of people from, I believe, Zuccotti Park.
Oh, good. I would like to hear them.
All right. So why don't you make yourselves comfortable? I'll play a bit of music and I can get you set up. Hold on there. Hold on.
You gotta help me. These mercury emission standards are gonna kill my bottom line. You'll take care of it? How much should I make this out for? Do say hello to your pappy.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. Do you have any objection to my asking you your names?
No, not at all.
My name's Daniel Levine. I've been at the protest for 24 days now. I work the info table. Okay. My name's Daniel Levine. I've been there for 24 days now at Zuccotti Park. I work the front and back information tables. I end up working them probably about 12, 16 hours a day.
My name's Justin Lasea, and pretty much likewise, I've been there since last Tuesday, and I walked up, introduced myself, and I've been at info table pretty much the rest of the time.
Well, so what is going to happen? They're going to try to empty the park.
Oh yeah, they're definitely. They actually have a. Just as we were leaving to come over here, they actually parked a Beth Sinai Hospital ambulance right outside the park. So it's looking a little bit like things are going to get hairy. There's two rumors going around the park. The one that if there's going to be a general police sweep, it's going to happen at 4 a.m. One that if it's going to be a sanitation sweep, it's going to be at 7 a.m. But we have plans for direct actions. Our direct action committee has been working on plans for both of those, and we're not going to cede the park, hopefully. So, we're going to do everything in our power not to cede the park. So.
Well, we had heard that there were members of the New York City Council and even some other...
Letitia James is one.
Who are going to be forming a ring around the park.
Concentric rings, I think.
I didn't hear anything about the city council members, but the ring thing, yeah, the ring, that's a big tactic. If it's a sanitation sweep, they said Bloomberg said that it was going to happen in thirds. So if that happens, we're not going to cede... We're going to have at least two-thirds of the park at all times until the sanitation thing is done. If it's a police sweep, then the concentric circle is probably going to be a much more important thing. The fact that they have the hospital there makes it seem much more likely that there is going to be some kind of forceful sweep. And as people are kind of buzzing about it, around there, there's a lot of some anxiety. You know, some people are getting pretty riled up, but we've been having nonviolence trainings for 3.5, going on 4 weeks now, so hopefully nothing bad will happen.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest worry is that it'll turn into something like with Boston, where, you know, they have, you know, pretty much police and riot gear, you know, just go into the crowd. So that's why there's a lot of tension as far as, I think, on our side. But, yeah, hopefully something like that doesn't happen, because, I mean, as bad as it would be for us, it would probably be a complete media fiasco for them.
Yeah, I mean, Bloomberg's been kind of trying to, he's been feeling out the media on this for a couple of days, because he sent out a lot of very contradictory statements. I'm sure you're aware of the statement about, I'm going to let them stay in the park as long as they want. Right after that, they said,
as long as they can stand on one leg.
Right, as long as they can stand on one, you know, he's going to have us do the hokey pokey by the time this thing's over. But the night he said that, and this is after he said that we were somehow hurting whatever's left of the job market, suddenly there was for some reason they had to do road work right next to the square with jackhammers between the hours of 8 p.m. and midnight, which I'm not that familiar with how they do construction work in the city, but I don't think that's how it normally works.
Well, that doesn't interfere with traffic during the day.
Right, yeah.
It's supposed to be Howard Stern's idea.
There's no traffic going through there anyway because it was on the side with all the police vans. But I don't know. Maybe Howard Stern sent him over. I don't know.
Do you mind my asking you what you do in real life?
In real life, I don't spend a lot of time. No, I'm kidding. I'm a music writer. I write for, I'm a journalist more generally. But I'm a filmmaker. I made a film in 2009 called Acquaintances about a man who broke his hands 5 times and could crack his knuckles to pitches of different pop songs. and then I currently write record reviews for a place called ObscureSound.com.
Yeah, and I'm a recent graduate. I had been looking for a job since February, and I think I might have a job now, but it's kind of in the sort of introductory phases, so I might be moving to New York from Michigan. So it's kind of crazy.
Wait, I just bit into cardboard.
You're on the phone with Paul Krasner from Paul. Hello.
Yes.
You're still. You have anything you want to? You want to ask these gentlemen?
One of the things I think as a result of this. Process that I've always seen in the past was that the developing of a real sense of community, you're participating in it, and I'm an observer in this case, but is that, have you found that to be true?
Oh, yes, very much
so.
Oh,
yeah, in the square, yeah, totally. I mean, that's actually getting, not to be an issue so much, but it's getting to the point where the General Assemblies, every night we spend probably more time than we should talking about things like sleeping bags, and so that's hindering the political action a little bit. But on the other hand, I mean, if you've been sleeping in a wet sleeping bag for a couple of weeks, that's probably a pretty immediate concern. I personally have an apartment in Brooklyn, but Justin's been sleeping out there, so he might be able to speak more directly to that.
Yeah, it's been a little bit more difficult every day, because more and more people have been coming out to find a spot. Lately, I've been kind of sleeping on the stairs, which is not the most fun, because you roll off and you just fall down. But I mean, I think it's quite an experience, and I think it was definitely worth coming out here for the experience of being out and being a part of something that is possibly huge.
Are you in touch?
Another thing that occurred to me. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bob.
Go ahead. No, please.
Oh, okay. Well, I was. It occurred to me. You know, everybody. I think that Kanye West came through, and people were hostile to him because he's part of the 1% almost.
Well, I mean, he also came up in a limousine.
He came in a limo?
He came in a limo. It's the same thing as like when Russell Simmons lives in the building directly opposite the park, but when Russell Simmons came in, I mean, his I think Fat Firm's the name of his clothing label, and they have a lot of connections to kind of child labor issues overseas. So he was. I mean, we've been. It's good to see that there isn't much traction for the kind of cult of personality celebrity culture in the square, because.
Well, Michael Moore was down.
Michael Moore. People in the square are kind of undecided about it. I mean, Michael Moore was there from the first day, so I have to respect that. On the other hand, when there was the after the union march last Wednesday, not I guess now last Wednesday, there was an offshoot march that happened afterwards with a lot of black bloc anarchist kids that I'd never seen in my life that were just talking about getting into street fights with the cops when they came by the info desk. And then Michael Moore, I don't think he really knew what the situation was, and he called for a lot more people to go into that march. That one ended pretty violently, and so it's important if, you know, we have celebrity visitors or something, that they realize that they shouldn't make decisions based on partial information without our direct action committee, even though if they do a mic check, mic check's what we do in the square to get people's attention. If they do that, you know, they shouldn't do that with just partial information, because people are going to get hurt.
We have a report that the crowds are thinning out now.
Down at the park?
Yeah, right, despite all the pizza they're getting.
I don't know. It's as the night's been going on, the more and more the message gets out that we're having something big in the morning, I've seen it grow, and which I'm absolutely surprised, because how much rain we've been having, like, walking here, we got drenched.
But.
I understand that you won't be able to bring back sleeping bags when you're readmitted. That's one of the things they're putting out.
That's
as
if
well.
They can enforce it. I mean, yeah. There have been a lot of laws that have been very partial enforcement or just plain arbitrary enforcement. Some things I don't even think are laws. Like,
have any of the people who've been arrested gone before a judge?
I think most of their court dates, the girl that got pepper sprayed is in court now, or she's in proceedings to sue Tony Baloney.
There was more than one person who was pepper sprayed.
Oh, yeah, there were a couple. The one girl that I know personally, she went to Albany the next day. She saw an optometrist and then started legal proceedings, and hopefully that'll move through. Usually those things take a couple of years. The court dates for most of the people that got, like, arrested on the Brooklyn Bridge, that they even gave court dates. A lot of them they just let go. Because it was an entrapment thing, but they just wanted to get the people off the bridge. I don't think they necessarily wanted. They didn't think they were going to get any intelligence from it. And what happened with them is most of their court dates are like sometime next month. They got basically the equivalent of a ticket.
Desk appearance.
Yeah, desk appearance.
Yeah, it was more of a intimidation, you know, detain and release kind of thing. You know, this is what we can do. You know, be afraid.
Well, you've been down there since the very beginning, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah.
Have you noticed a difference in the attitude of the press?
The press was completely ignoring us for the first 6 days until the pepper spraying incident.
Isn't it that something Gandhi said? First they ignore you, then they mock you, and then they fight you, and then you win.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in the part where we're just at the beginning of getting out of the mocking and into the fighting stage. There was a remarkable kind of coherence to the press coverage, which unfortunately had very little to do with what was actually going on in the square. You know, the whole thing about they don't have demands, and that kind of, I don't know if that comes out of an ignorance of how an occupation works, because, I mean, we're not going to have demands until we have enough people where we can actually affect those demands. If that was something from the top down. I mean, in the New York Times case, it was definitely from the top down. I spoke to a couple of the lower New York Times reporters, and that's the only real explanation for why the coverage got changed 20 minutes later on the Brooklyn Bridge article.
Yeah, and then there's the sort of just blatant misdirection as far as the news.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we've seen people bring in the Daily Mail brought in a guy to drop trow in front of a police car, and then the next day the article was, you know, man craps on police car with a picture of the guy, and I mean, it must have been like a buffalo nickel because I didn't smell anything, but I don't think actually, because it didn't show up on the arrest blotter. I'm sure they would have arrested a guy if he actually had crapped on a police car. Sean Hannity brought over some crusty old man that Fox News must have on retainer or something to interview. We've had issues with that, but it's, yeah, it's... nobody really takes Fox News that seriously. I don't think anybody in the UK really takes the Daily Mail that seriously either.
Fox News is an oxymoron around here.
but you know, it occurs to me that in the investigation, I think they might find Bill O'Reilly's fingerprint in that feces.
Yeah, that's probably. The Daily Mail. The Sean Hannity didn't send somebody out to defecate at the protest.
He does enough of it on the air himself.
Right. There's enough defecation to go around.
And anytime, there was Geraldo was out there, and he pretty much got booed out of the park.
Same thing happened to Thomas Friedman, because Thomas Friedman's persona non grata around the park. I think mostly because of his opposition to the Iraq War, but I think part of it was the mustache. People, he came in and it wasn't like people, started throwing garbage at him or something, but they started asking him the hard questions and he just kind of left. Bloomberg was actually there yesterday. And he made like a 20-minute walk through and he kind of looked like,
anyone get to talk to him face to face?
Some people talked to him. I didn't get the sense. Nobody told me that he responded to them. He just kind of walked through very slowly, looked at things, and looked kind of disgusted that they were, not quite as clean as, say, the BAI studios.
Not the filthy masses that he imagined.
Paul, do you remember as a... an encampment in Washington, D.C. during the Vietnam War. There was a people who were sleeping at the Lincoln Memorial, and Nixon himself appeared and went and had a conversation with Rennie Davis. Do you remember that?
I don't know if it was with Rennie Davis. At some demonstration, he went out and spoke to the protesters about football. That's what I remember.
Well, I heard a version of that. It sounded pretty similar to that story, that apparently Hunter S. Thompson got a direct interview with Nixon because he was the only person who agreed to speak to Nixon about football and not about politics at all for 20 minutes. I think you can learn a lot about somebody by talking to them about football for a bit, though. And certainly you're going to get a much less studied pronouncement from them.
You know, it occurred to me, too, that the right wing is assuming that these protesters are going to vote for Obama. And I don't think, and yet it's interesting because so many of the issues almost overlap between some of the Tea Parties and some of the occupiers, certainly ending the war. They have that in common. There are it would be a great powerful comment. It would never work, of course, unless the way they talk about the media say, I could smell the pot. Oh, it was such a stench. But it would be interesting if that were true to see the Tea Partiers get contact high.
Well, the Tea Party, they may have gotten, there hasn't been much, but, the first week or so, everybody's using Rolly cigarette. Nobody in the park can afford pre-rolled cigarettes, so there'd be no way to even tell where it was coming from if there was. Also, in terms of the Obama thing, Obama's persona non grata in the park. Nobody there supports Obama. There's a lot of disenfranchised ex-Tea Partiers in the park. Obama, we had somebody drop off a big pink bucket of Obama pins, and we just reappropriated that as a chair at the information desk. We've been putting them in bags to use as paperweights. Yeah, I mean, nobody there. I mean, Justin can speak to this too.
Yeah, like people were sifting through it for the non like Hillary Obama pins. You know, the anti-war ones, the Bush is an idiot pin kind of.
Yeah, because people like pins, but they're kind of picky.
Yeah, as far as especially Obama because
they make good roach clips.
Hmm. Oh yeah. I mean, I think a Hillary Clinton roach clip would be. That is the peak of roach clip fashion. I mean, in terms of that's...
You gotta accessorize.
Mm.
Well, all right, so there's going to be some sort of a, I don't know, like a conflict this morning.
Yeah, there's going to be something's
some
going to happen.
Some sort of a confrontation.
Lot of us are pulling all-nighters.
Not going to be Agincourt, but it's going to be something, something that will like leave a mark.
Oh, definitely.
And then what's next?
Well, if we get completely swept out of the park, hopefully we're moving to another park. What I've heard about is Tompkins Square Park to try to recreate the squatters' protest. I'm not really sure exactly. I mean, obviously, we've been keeping the specific plans kind of under wraps because we had an issue at one march where people were trying to make a consensus decision. We had people marching on both sides of the street, and they used the people's mic on both sides of the street to get the consensus. So then you have cops right in the middle of it. So they just figured out, oh, well, they're all going that way. Let's arrest them all. And so that there are certain things that, you know, a lot of people chanting doesn't really work tactically, and this is one of them. So we're keeping that a little bit under wraps. But the thing about the circles is I can confirm that, yeah.
Have you considered simply regrouping, like the next night?
Yeah, that's one of the options, yeah.
Zuccotti Park, since it's privately owned, it's exempt from the other park regulations in that the others have a midnight, I believe, curfew, something like that. Mm-hmm. There is no such curfew in Zuccotti Park.
Well, the other parks you can't smoke in either, which I think probably would have sunk this a lot quicker than we got a lot of people out there chain smoking. No, I don't think anybody would have left, but we would have had a big ring. You know, there would have been a ring of people smoking around the park and then a ring of cops in that case.
Are there courtesans?
Courtesans?
No, those are at the court.
No, right, I was a little confused.
Portisans.
Potties.
Oh, potties. We've been mostly using the McDonald's bathroom. We were in talks for a little bit to get the Iron Workers Local 40, who are working on rebuilding one of the World Trade Center towers, to let us have a porta potty there. But, no, I mean, Trinity Church has been letting us use their bathroom during the day. Century 21's been letting us use their bathroom during the day. But McDonald's is the only one that's open 24 hours, so that's... Kind of that's where the real movements happen, right? So,
and Burger King is also figured.
No, Burger King.
Yeah,
had,
they don't like us.
Burger King has had very, very large men in suits posted outside the bathroom door since probably like day two. The only sign I've made for the protest actually said "Down with Burger King Bathroom Gestapo" and had a little arrow on it.
Seen some really good signs.
Oh, yeah, there have been some great signs, yeah.
Some of them would be great bumper stickers.
I think one of the most powerful ones that I've seen is the one that says, "This is the first time I felt like I'm home," that somebody set, like, right at the bottom of the stairs to the park. And that one was like, wow.
Yeah,
that call you might have heard before off mic was from the tally room somehow, and it was a caller in there wanted to know, what are you, will you prepare to withstand police violence? Well, obviously, you've taken courses in nonviolent training, and I think you would back away. And
yeah, I mean, they...
It's common sense.
Yeah, you back away. You know, you don't put your hands in your pockets, obviously, if they're trying to arrest you. We have just swarms and swarms of lawyers, so... If you get arrested, you might be there at most like 27 hours, and you just put up with it. You know, I mean, if you're not willing to get arrested, I mean, if there's something worth getting arrested for, this is something to get worth getting arrested for. So, I mean, and also we've been there for a long time. We're not like I've gotten a lot of like middle-aged parents and stuff that come by the park, and they're just first thing they say when they come to the info desk is, I don't want to get arrested. I don't want to get... And in the park, usually there hasn't... I mean, this morning would probably be... If there are any mass arrests, God forbid, that would be the first time there were mass arrests actually in the park, not during one of the marches.
Well, I hope they've cleaned up that room they stuck protesters in during the RNC. I think on the west side of 54th Street, where toxic crap was on the floor, and somebody from here had the benefit of that atmosphere, too. There were a lot of lawsuits that resulted.
Well, I actually heard some reports back from the people that got arrested after the Brooklyn Bridge incident. And it ranged from, like, some of them, you know, they just kind of sat around. It was a clean room, and they were, you know, just singing things to annoy the guards. To, you know, my friend Bob, he got stuck in one where he said there was feces smeared on the wall in various artful configurations.
It was a party room.
Yeah, I guess that was the party room.
Have there been musicians? And I saw Stefan Said on Amy Goodman's program.
Oh, yeah.
There have been a couple professional musicians. Jeff Mangum was probably the best one, the guy from Nutrimoco Town.
Tom Morello came down earlier today. Sadly, I missed him, but yeah.
Jeff Lewis was down there.
Reverend Billy.
Jeffrey Lewis. Peter Stanford. Reverend Billy's been out there a lot.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, most of the people we get are, I said, working the info desk, I once had to hear the times they are a-changing sung out of tune 18 times in a row. And so we called a moratorium on that in the next General Assembly. It's kind of, I don't really like that song anymore.
I think Dylan does either.
Someday me and Bob Dylan have to have a good kind of.
We're
going to
have words
session.
On that
We're
going
to have words on that song.
And then the drummers. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Well, we actually had to have a General Assembly meeting and say, like, the drummers can only drum for 2 hours a day, because I took a day off on Tuesday. I was walking around with this girl in the Upper West Side, and in one second I realized, oh, my God, I don't hear drumming. It was, like, the first time I ever heard anything. You know, they're energetic. It's kind of funny. We have a guy drumming in the front who actually has, like, a... He doesn't have arms, really. He just kind of has hands. And somehow they managed to handcuff him. And I don't know logistically how they were able to do that. I asked him, and he didn't know either. He just kind of was handcuffed somehow. Like, I didn't... Like, without folding him in like a chair or something, you know?
Well, the unfortunate thing is that... no one paid any attention, pretty much, until there was an evidence of the brutality of the police. I guess it's true what they say about if what bleeds, leads.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I actually, of all people, I had a reporter from National Geographic magazine come up to the desk. And she just kept saying, it's like, when's the next big thing happening? I said, we have a General Assembly. And I said, no, the next big... She was waiting for somebody to throw something on fire in a garbage can, which, I don't know, I thought, like, National Geographic, they'd be happy we had topless women walking around, but, I don't know, it just was a weird thing to see
but
National Geographic.
Yeah, and everybody that I talk to, they're like, oh, is everybody getting arrested? And I'm like, not really, I mean... Most of the time, I'm just sitting at the desk talking to people. Occasionally, we got the real crazies coming out.
We get more crazies as it goes on.
Yeah.
We've got, like, because of the media thing saying we didn't have any demands, people come up in there, or that we don't have a leader. We have all these people, like, these kind of, like, these women that look kind of like handbags have been left out in the rain, and they come up with this, like, you know, I'm from Hollywood. I hear you need a leader. My friend invented the Black Panther handshake. He would be a great leader for it. It's like, where did you come from? Why? And we've gotten a bunch of, like, papers with just lists of demands. And if anyone's planning on bringing... We accept literature. We like ideas. I'm saying this as the info desk guy, that the revolution will have paragraph breaks, or at least bullet points. It will use the right form of then and your... That's.
But yeah, we've had quite a few of those sort of crazy ladies come up, and or like one time I had a guy come up calmly eating his lunch saying, "Radio waves turn people into robots," and I'm just sort of like,
"You do?
Wow, wow!"
Gary, no,
look around here.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what BAI's here for, right?
Well, I just kind of wanted to look at him with a straight face and start going beep, beep.
Well, Paul, do you have anything else that you want to say to these gentlemen?
Oh well, you know, I'm inspired by it. Before I was mentioning that when Obama was in the same park, Grant Park, where the police beat up a lot of the protesters, and then in 2008, that's where Obama gave his acceptance speech, and that field was crowded with people with such hope. I had never seen anything like that in my lifetime, and I remember writing at that time that it had. The early tremors of a nonviolent revolution. That's what it felt like. And this seems to, what's happening now with the spreading, you know, it's occupying the globe, I've had a sense of hope. You know, I keep wavering back and forth between, hope and despair. The arrow is pointing at this point towards hope, and I know that everybody that I know is inspired by this, most of them are participating in different cities, and it's kind of like the 60s in the sense that the 60s. The counterculture grew out of, exploded out of the control and blandness of the Eisenhower-Nixon years, and now it's coming out of how things are going backward, whether it's reproduction rights or medical marijuana rights, or seems to be at a crux now of things boiling to the surface, and the Occupy movement is happening globally, just the way in '60s there was an evolutionary jump in consciousness, and I feel. From all the information and observations about what's going on, this could well be, American Spring in this country, and I hope it blooms.
It was catalyzed by LSD, though. What did you say?
You're on the air too. Hi.
The movement in general, it was a vital part of it.
The thing. I named the Yippies, but I named it after and it came out of YIP with the letters for Youth International Party, It existed as a phenomenon before I labeled it, and that was because as a journalist I knew that the media would need a who for the who, what, when, where, and why. Once we manipulated the media into spreading our myth, we had to open an office because we were getting all these from campuses and off campuses of people who wanted to, who suddenly realized that they were yippies, because it was outspoken. I think it was marijuana even before LSD, because LSD was legal until October 1966, and so it was marijuana that the yippies saw, and people see today, that there is a linear connection between busting kids for smoking a weed all the way to drones killing 168 children in Pakistan. And it's the ultimate extension of the dehumanization of the kids who smoke pot. And if people can, cover their eyes and or look the other way and whatever they do to their soul to allow themselves to participate in that dehumanization, if they can do that for just smoking a weed, then that same kind of dehumanization is the ultimate extension in dropping bombs on kids from drones by somebody who's in Las Vegas. So anyway, I see more and more people that this. I think what's happening now is another explosion of an evolutionary jump in consciousness. People are seeing through. You know, it's that old metaphor of grass growing through the cracks sidewalk. The sidewalk.
Yeah. You're on the air too. Hi. Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hello, Paul.
Hello.
This is Marshall.
Hey, Marshall. Marshall Efron.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Well, huh.
I've been to Zuccotti Park four times now.
Cool.
And I've enjoyed myself each time. I found it very profound, very moving.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely amazing. You know, sitting at an information desk, especially, we get all these people that come up and are like, you know, thank you guys for being out here. You know, I wish this had happened years ago. You know, all this sort of attention from the public that's just been overwhelmingly supportive.
Yeah, just to speak to the LSD issue. Very, very quickly. There are no drugs in the park. I don't believe that any of the occupations have been particularly fueled by drug consciousness. So I just want to point that out because there have been a lot of attempts to smear the movement as being sort of this. I mean, not as like a refutation of what you were saying, but just to kind of clarify that.
In the four times that I've been there, I have not smelled anything.
Yeah.
Or seen anything or witnessed anybody's behavior that was freaking out, you know.
Even near Hannity, you didn't smell anything near that police car?
I didn't see that. I wasn't there for that.
I don't think anybody's dumb enough to try to use illicit substances in a square surrounded by several hundred police officers. Or I'd hope not. Some of the NYU kids.
You can't smell LSD.
No, but I mean, I can't see. I mean, I've had limited experiences with hallucinogenics, and I think that would be a pretty bad trip.
It would not be. It wouldn't be worthy. It wouldn't be worthy of what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, because it's like even just the kind of central elements of the square we're surrounded by. There's a Burger King on one side. There's this building that looks like an ugly, overgrown file cabinet, and then there's a lot of wet, kind of cold things. I can't see how that would extrapolate itself through the psychedelic experience into anything that would be particularly enjoyable. Maybe enjoyable might not be strong enough a word.
I mean, the aesthetic surroundings aren't conducive to.
I mean, they're barely. If there weren't the people in the square, I mean, it's just an ugly park.
But it's also the issues are much larger than that. Yeah. It's not about drugs. It's the issues are about of the foreclosure of people's houses, the fact that a kid coming out of college A can't get a job and B is saddled with incredible debt.
Well, what about the hordes that are in prison on account of drugs? That's one of the issues, I think.
Oh, yeah, and the privatization of prisons has been an awful thing.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, what's it called? It's not the Container Corporation of America.
Yeah, the fact that I think America's number one as far as percentage of population incarcerated now.
Right. 2 million.
That's right. And we farmed
it
out.
We're number one! Yay!
Hey, well, I mean, I'm from Flint, and we're number one in violent crime and unemployment. So
makes you want to get one of those big foam gloves.
Yeah, yeah. I walk around with that all day.
That's where Michael Moore comes from.
Yeah, so. We got three strikes against us.
Well, I think he's been all right.
He's been all right in this square. He hasn't been as bad as, like, Susan Sarandon came twice, and she kind of she's looking pretty good for a 63-year-old lady, but she's not a particularly eloquent speaker, unfortunately. We've had Michael Moore. I didn't see any of the speeches he gave. Chris Hedges, I think, has been probably one of the best people to come out to the square in terms of the talk he gave.
Joseph Stiglitz.
Yeah, Joseph Stiglitz gave a very good talk.
Cornel West
gave a very good speech at the General Assembly. Trying to think who else is.
Naomi Klein came by.
Yeah,
last
she spoke
week.
By this. There's this statue at the corner that we just call the Bloody Chopsticks.
I
think it has a real name.
I'd like to see Irwin Corey come down.
I would love to see Professor Corey come down.
You forwarded me an email, Paul, about some of Corey's current activities.
He's the
panhandler. He's 97 years old.
Yeah, well, he just got back from Chicago, where he did two shows on Saturday night, 35 minutes each, one after another. And one of his jokes was that Barack Obama must have Alzheimer's disease because he keeps forgetting his campaign promises.
Hopefully Thomas Pynchon won't have to write another Gravity's Rainbow to get him out to the square. We'd love to have Professor Corey out there.
Well, he raises money for medical equipment for Cuban kids, for Cuban children.
That's right.
He donates all the money that he picks up, that he panhandles.
And he actually goes to cars with a styrofoam cup and says, can you help us out with some change?
That's right.
Well,
yeah.
I know how to contact him by way of mutual friends. But
yeah, I think his son, Richard listens.
Oh, okay. But let me know if his son doesn't contact anybody, or who they would contact. Or should I have him contact you, Bob?
I used to have his number somewhere.
We can
call
get
him
it.
And tell
we
him
can,
to call us.
Okay.
And this is WBAI in New York City that we're asking you to call. And hey, how about some people calling up and pledging some support to WBAI at this time?
Yes.
We're trying to sustain ourselves. We're trying to get enough money to pay our electrical bills and our rent, and all of the other necessities that go into running a radio station on a little frayed shoestring. Come on now, call up and pledge $10, is all we're asking at this moment. $10. One person call up and pledge $10. 212-209-2950.
That's right. We're panhandling now. If everyone can do it, we can do it. By the way, I should say that I just picked up a copy of the schedule for Thursday and through Saturday. And normally, what's scheduled to be where we are right now, doing a live program with reports from people in the park, is supposed to be a rebroadcast of Talkback. Now, we have to, raise something to show that maybe Talkback, a rebroadcast of Talkback would raise money. We have to at least do a Talkback code on recording. So far, we have a long way to go.
I go to Global Revolution. Is that any good, or is there something better?
website?
That's the live stream website. That's good to get the live stream. If you want the official blog, it's at OccupyWallST.org.
Uh-huh.
That, unfortunately, the webmaster for that's out in Tennessee, so the thing that gets updated more often is nycga.net, and then the site for all the occupations is occupytogether.org. And I'd like to make a $5 contribution to the BAI fund drive, because you guys are pretty much the only thing I listen to on my radio.
Hey, I don't know whether we're equipped to handle cash.
All right. Well,
down the room we can.
But thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Call up and pledge your support.
Oh, okay. Well, my phone's dead, so I figure this would probably be the best time to do
it.
Well,
maybe
while we're here.
Maybe you can walk back to the tally room. Isn't there anyone else who's going to match that contribution? Yeah. 212-209-2950.
Yeah, we're squatting on a rebroadcast. That was always my point. So we have to raise money. A rebroadcast could raise money. Can't we get something going here?
Well, look, are there people who want to support us and maybe who have given everything they can give? Maybe they could just call and tell the people in Tally not to pick the phone up. No, just let them call and encourage the people in Tally just by dialing 212-209-2950. We'd like to fill the switchboard. 212-209-2950. We'd like to fill the switchboard with people who just want to give us a little encouragement.
Don't pick up yet, Tally.
Don't pick up. Please don't pick up. And we'll give you enough time to disentangle yourself from the electronic maze. 212-209-2950. Can we have one person who wants to help us give that number a little buzz? 212-209-2950. Come on, let's have a few people call.
I hope
Tally
is listening to us instead of CBS 101 or something.
212-209-2950. Let's see if we can get a flurry of people calling in to support just to support us spiritually, if in no other way.
Can you hear the phones?
Can we hear the phones in here?
Yes, we can. Usually they drive us nuts, but
212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Is there no one out there listening who can call and just like call and let that number ring? 212-209-2950.
Maybe their cell phones are shorting out in the rain.
Well, might be.
The phones are lighting up, Tally says, in there.
That's very good. All the phones lighting up? Are there? We have no way of knowing. This thing is not working now, huh?
No, they switched to something else.
How can we tell if the phones are ringing?
Well, Tally called us and told us so.
Well, 212-209, can we have another call or two? 212-209-2950. As Amy Goodman says, we urge you to call. We urge you to call. And then she'll go through listing all of the stops on the Long Island Railroad. And all of it, if you're, and how about on the subway? If you live near 14th Street, if you live near 23rd Street, if you live in Chelsea, if you live in Greenwich Village, even if you live in the Upper West Side, give us a call, 212-209-2950. All you people who occupy Zabar's, 212-209-2950. Give us a call. Encourage
everybody
us.
Everybody with a flat screen TV.
212-209-2950.
You should donate before, like, they have to. You guys have to sing the number like Alan Chartok does on NPR. Don't force them to that. Yeah. Oh, okay. I've never.
It's a good idea. No, they used to sing Hare Krishna to one of the old numbers. Remember?
I remember.
They're still ringing in there. So should we count down maybe, and then they get the hardcore?
Right, they're ringing, okay. And they're not picking them up. That's good. Good, very good. But I will say that if you have actually gone to the trouble of dialing the number, it might be okay for you to stay on the line. I'm going to ask people who want to hang up to hang up. I'm going to count down from 10, 9, 8, you know, like that, and you'll have a chance to get off the line if all you wanted to do was give us a little contribution of spirit. But you could decide to stay on and pledge some kind of support. 212-209-2950. Can we have a full switchboard before we get off the phone here? Can we get a full switchboard? 212-209-2950. Now, I guess we'll count down and let you hang up if you don't want to subscribe, if you don't want to support WBAI, if you already have supported WBAI, if you hate WBAI, you can get off the line. 212-209-2950. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, three, two, give before it hurts. 212. If WBAI were not here, it would hurt. 212-209-2950. Where was I? 10, 9, 8, 7.
2950.
No, 295. I'm getting confused with these numbers. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. I said, okay. What were the numbers that I was counting down? Do you recall?
Well, you know what you leave off at? Well, I don't know. 3210.
3-2-3-2-1. All right, is your last chance. 212-209-2950. Some people have hung up, okay. So if you got a busy signal, and now you can call back, and you can get on the
if
air.
You really
you
mean
can
it
get
now.
Into that, yeah. And you really can help to support us. 212-209-2950. 3-2-1. I don't know whether anyone stayed on or whether anyone pledged, but it really would be helpful if you did. 212-209-2950. You don't have to call in that special effort push that we're making. Just keep the calls coming in. 212-209-2950. I'm sorry, gentlemen, to interrupt your activities.
BAI is very important.
Help to keep this radio going. Even a small contribution, they add up.
Yeah.
You can't hear this going on any other station right now, I dare say.
You guys in WFMU are the only things worth listening to pretty much on the New York City radio dials.
I don't know. KCR is pretty good.
Oh, okay.
No, jazz.
There's like a classical station or in a jazz station, but I never got the call numbers on those. But
well, we have timely reports. You guys just came over. I mean, we're closer than anybody else, too, just by coincidence.
And sometimes even the NPR stations come up with something really wonderful and helpful.
Some things considered.
212-209-2950. Paul Marshall, still there?
I'm still here.
Paul?
I'm sort of still here, but fading out.
It's kind of late for you out in the desert, isn't it?
Well, it's been a hectic week. I'm pleased to have been part of the program because I identify so much with what these anonymous people are doing. You know, every single one of them is committed. I'm sure there are some people who go there for free food, but they're not necessarily mutually exclusive. So I get one other thing I just want to mention because I was mentioning before a sense of continuity, and I get a huge sense of continuity with Radio Unnameable because that's when you got calls from people who were participating in actions on the streets. And, you know, what started the underground press was the difference between what they experienced on the streets and how that was reported in the media. And so, Bob, your program was a missing link then, and it's a missing link now. And it's still you. Still say everything's the same, even the squeaky chair.
Oh, you know, I just had a thought. This is a strange thought, but you know what's missing on the news, on television, on NBC, CBS, and ABC? And it's also missing on CNN and Fox and MSNBC. This is what's missing. Nobody ever mentions the severity of the storms that it has to do with the product of global warming.
Yeah, I mean, that's been hushed up quite a bit.
It's really been, it is totally dead. You don't ever hear anybody saying the severity of this flood that they have is somewhere in Pakistan or Bangladesh, or what's going on now in the droughts in Texas, or anywhere else. This no cause is attributed to the fact that there is a climate change, that there is some kind of global warming. They don't mention it.
Well, you know, they don't want to make people depressed. And besides that, there's this horse race that's going on in the... you know, the Republicans are going to have 13 more, quote, debates.
Oh, I love it.
You would.
That's my hobby. Oh, you can't keep me away.
So-called debates.
I know all of the nine points of 999 of Cain. So great. This is a total disaster. He gets rid of Social Security and Medicaid at the same time.
Well, it's just kind of sad because really of all of them, you know, only like one is electable, and that's Romney.
Romney's the only one who said that global warming is a thing.
Yeah, well, that and everybody else is just completely off their rocker, you know.
I mean,
Texas doesn't even like Rick Perry, you know.
Right.
It's kind of sad.
Well, Texas never really liked Bush that much even before he got elected, at least the people I know out in Texas. And if I can ask you a question, it's a little bit off. Paul, is your last name Krasner?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I'm a big realist fan. Sorry. I don't know. It's just kind of weird.
Same guy.
Yeah. I thought you the interview you did in the 60s, that was the best Norman Mailer interview I ever read.
Oh, I appreciate that. I did a lot of homework for that.
It showed.
Evidently there were some people who did pledge their support,
great,
who did stay on
line.
Thank you very much. Maybe we can get some of those names in and read them. But just because we got a little flurry of activity doesn't mean that we're done for the night. We've got to get some more money to support the station now. Come on, 212-209-2950. Thank you. Let's see if we can bring this up to at least round another couple of hundred before we get off the air. 212-209-2950. Excuse me for interrupting you, Paul. You were being praised for your Norman Mailer interview.
He was provocative, you know, and I like that. You know, that he said that he was not afraid to risk an opinion that was not politically correct. So before I hit the hay, I just want to also thank Marshall.
Yes.
Who you once told me something about improv that has...
It changed your life, didn't it?
No, but it smoothed the path.
Okay.
You said that if somebody tells you they're a giraffe, they're a giraffe.
That's right.
And so I have met a lot of crazy people, and that taught me how to deal with them. And I had a herd of giraffes, if you'd like to buy them, with the Brooklyn Bridge.
It applies to life.
It applies to life in so many situations because
people are revealing themselves when the metaphor when they say they're a giraffe, and so I have been able to crawl into their consciousness rather than try to
argue them out of it.
Yeah, or force my own consciousness on them. I know where I'm at, and so it just helps me understand them because there's a basis for their thinking they're a giraffe.
It's the first rule of improvisatory theater, that is agreement.
Uh-huh.
You always agree to whatever someone sets it up, and then you say, okay, I'll go with that.
You accept.
Oh, I don't agree with that concept, Marshall.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You accept the premise.
Yes. Bob knows.
Well, that's what they did at the premise.
That's right.
Well, that didn't mean to be the conversation stopper, Paul. Paul, I really would hope that you're doing some work on your autobiography, which you've been working on for a few years now.
Well, that was published in 1993. But
I read it. I read it not that long ago.
Soft Skull Press.
But you've lived almost 10 years since then.
Huh? Yeah, right. But there's going to be an expanded, updated edition published in next year by Soft Skull Press, an independent publisher. And then I have, I finally got an agent who's publishing my collection, 50 Years of Investigative Satire. So, some other book was coming out. I forget the name of it. Anyway, good night, you all, and thanks for passing along the inspiration.
Good night.
Thank you.
All right.
Good
night,
Paul.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Just want to say that the three, the spirit of Yippie actually carries on right in this room. We have three of the Yippie conspirators. Bob.
The Bob, Pie Man comes Marshall, and sits at the desk with us a lot.
Bob, Marshall, and Paul.
We were Youth International Party.
Yes.
That's right.
And Abby's, remember they sang the song for Pegasus, You're a Grand Old Pig?
Did he wind up at someone's dinner? I heard. I don't know. What was his fate?
I would like to think
that. No, I think he died fat and old.
Okay. Might have been taken to the pig farm.
Right.
Is that like the hog farm, you mean?
The hog farm, yeah.
Ah, okay.
That was when, I'm trying to remember. I think they had the hog farm before that.
Yes, they did.
Well, that'll be a nice retirement place. Put him out.
Not
to
so.
Stud. No?
Not so much, no. You don't enjoy it. It's not a fun place.
Too smelly?
Yeah. It's not a pleasure. Not a pleasure palace. Pigs.
Are there any other callers?
Yes. Should we try one?
Sure.
Okay.
Good morning. Good on the radio.
Linda from Princeton checking in.
Good morning, Linda. Good morning. From Princeton.
I'm so honored. I hear you have Professor Duty on the other line there.
I was Professor Duty.
Yeah, when I spoke to you last in 2004, you were talking about the Libby Dole calendar, the swimsuit calendar.
Oh, yes. and the Cheney Gonzalez bumper sticker.
Well, good to hear your voice. I'm sorry I missed Mr. Krasner. When he was talking about the anti-war protests and the Yippies and all, there have been several recently released documentaries, say within the last 5 years, that pretty fully documented the amount of mutiny that was occurring amongst the U.S. soldiers in Vietnam that formed in large part a reason for the ending of the war. I mean, the numbers of officers grunts.
Fragging.
Refusing to obey illegal orders. It was massive. It was in the tens of thousands, and they knew they were going to lose. And there were over 500 different newspapers being published underground in Vietnam by the troops at that point in 1969 or 70. So the other thing I wanted to say, Bob, Chris Hedges is a marvelous speaker. He has been on Leonard Lopate, and he got away with the full Monty, as they say. Everything he had to say on Democracy Now, he said on WNYC. He also did it with the NPR affiliate in Philadelphia.
WHYY.
Yes, and I forget who he did it with. Also, Alice Walker has gotten away with quite a number of statements on Palestine relating to her own husband, who was Jewish, who regarded her as an anti-Semite. And she got away with that on Tell Me More, Michelle Martin's program, and on Leonard Lopate. So there's a bit happening, not much. But the thing that concerns me is I wondered if you have any of the Occupy people still there.
Oh, yep, we're still here.
Oh, good. Yeah. Have you noticed many contractors being used as security? Because I think that represents a possibility of...
Contractors?
Yes.
Meaning like building contractors or like outside
security?
Security contractors.
Hired security?
Outsourcing building
contractors? No, we've had internal security. We call them the de-escalation subcommittee.
I mean amongst the corporate interests down on Wall Street. I'm sure they've hired private contractors to protect their
companies.
Well, yeah. They,
I mean, we've had a lot of, like, people that were very suspicious. Oh, sorry, I kind of...
It's okay. I mean, of course, you know, there's the building security people that they have around there, but, you know, they don't really come over towards the park at all.
Yeah, they just kind of watch us when they're eating sandwiches.
I had heard that the building security people were joining you.
For lunch, they would come over sometimes to eat lunch. The construction workers at the Iron Workers Local 40 that are over building the World Trade Center building, they come over, and they're great guys.
But you remember in Florida, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, during, the GTO? I forget what it was called. That gathering, the Miami police were in minority numbers compared to private contractors who were hired by the city of Miami, I believe it was.
We haven't had Brookfield Investments, who own Zuccotti Park, could technically hire their own private security, but I think they're very worried about the image and the amount of money that they'd be liable for any physical injury.
Potential
but it
injury.
Might just not be covered. So they may not be worried about it. I mean,
it's very possible they could have hired people. I mean, we've had infiltration from we've had pretty obvious undercover cops. The first week they weren't even trying. Because you could tell the cops because they bought everything in bulk.
Yeah.
That or they drive. Up
I mean, they
and
also that for some reason they
the
thought
the
that
vehicle.
For some reason they thought that all casual women's clothing, like they had like a series of four people come up in consecutive days. Wearing, like, these New York Giants maternity sweaters.
Yeah.
There was a great one that I talked to. This 35-year-old guy rode up on a longboard, and I'm like, yeah, you know, 35-year-olds generally don't go around on skateboards. Yeah. I'm like, nah, you don't really fit
Listen,
the profile
there was,
on that
there
one.
There was an infiltrator at a 2003 anti-war protest that I attended at Princeton. And I stayed beyond the protest on Palmer Square, which is the central place in the town. And I held up my thing and my clipboard and a candle. And within about a half hour, some lunatic rides up on a Harley, rode up to right where my feet were and was going to run over them. There were a bunch of my liberal friends sitting on the park bench at the time taking pictures of it. And I said, what the hell are you taking pictures for? Get up and help me fight this guy off. And they were just bewildered, and I said, this isn't a joke. This is what's going to be happening, and people are going to sit by and try to document it. You got to intervene and help your friends or help somebody. And that's what worries me is how quickly this could turn into a panic unless there's really, really good organization.
We're pretty organized. We've had issues with... we've had agent provocateurs there, I mean, probably since day one. we've had people try to start things, and that's why it's good to have the de-escalation squad there.
Yeah.
Because they go over and they make sure, like, we can't have any open flames in the park, and there were these three NYU kids that showed up, and they were, like, swinging candles. I don't know who swings around a candle, but they were swinging around candles, and so they think they were drunk or something. But the de-escalation squad had them out of the park in, like, 5 minutes. I mean, we've had some... We've had some pretty crazy people. We had one guy who thought he was a vampire, and he, you know, he said, like, I've got, he had, like, some kind of speech impediment. He was like, I've got rocks in my, I can't do the speech, but anyways, he's got rocks in his sleeves or something, and he's like, yes, if the cops come, I have the rocks in my sleeves, and I will call my anarchist leader. Wrap your head around that. Anyway, so I call my anarchist leader, and he'll bring my... It'll bring all my anarchist friends, and eventually I think the escalation squad ended up getting him out of the park for his own good.
The only other thing I want to contribute is a friend of mine passed away. He was a math professor. He's the only one who gave up his tenure in the 60s to be on the side of the students.
Mm.
And he, because the left wanted to arm the campus police at Stony Brook, and he said, leave that to the right wing, and he quit. And he's the only one I know of. As far as I know, Chris Hedges has pretty much done the same thing. I'm waiting for Chomsky to do it. Where's Chomsky in all of this?
Chomsky called us, actually.
Give up your position, Mr. Chomsky. Let's go.
He's very old.
Well, yeah. I'm sorry. I've
he
given up.
Called?
Yeah, he called the protest. Chomsky did call... Occupy Wall Street, I believe, the first Friday, and he sent us an email, and he basically said, you know, it's, you know, he said, I like what you guys are doing. Keep up the good work. We thought there was a chance he might come to speak, but
sorry,
I don't think he's an older guy.
Chomsky is no longer a hero of mine. Chris Hedges is, and
just because he didn't show up,
Chris Hedges is a hero. He's denounced the universities as corrupt, corporatist, etc. So the parents, the liberal parents who are still sending their kids off to these corrupt institutions, need to take a second look at it. Without those liberal parents, those institutions can't survive. So the liberal parents who are shelling out 50 grand a year are in a position to do a major protest, but they go along with this system. They support it, and that's why Chris Hedges is serious. He's outed them.
Well, I mean, was Chris Hedges ever tenured?
He had a visiting professorship, but believe me, I see him once a month here in Princeton buying books, and I go up to him and I say, hey, Chris, you know, I've got your back here, but aren't you getting a little scared? And he says, yeah, I keep my eyes out. He gave up, he had a lecturer's position, but he has exposed what his experience at Princeton was, which is rather significant because Cornel West is not about to do it. And I understand he's, you know, he may have kids in college, you know. But we can't deny the fact that these institutions exist to give a competitive edge to certain segments of the population, including the liberals, against the poor and the working class. And why haven't people been out for 50 years, you know, doing these demonstrations nationwide about the poor? When it hit the middle class, it finally happened. We have to start with the poor.
Is Marshall still there? Marshall?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I disagree to a certain extent because I think that these schools are so expensive,
yeah,
are so incredibly expensive, that if a kid is going to have an education, mm-hmm, then they gotta bite the bullet and they gotta put the money behind the kids.
But why have an education from a corrupt system?
It's a corrupt system, but where do you make the judgment?
I'm going to speak as a current student here. I think that it's not just the corrupt system and the price of it too. I mean, I've been going to Baruch College for 4 years now, and it's basically been a very expensive library card.
Yeah.
The quality of the education has gone down.
Started going down in the 1930s, by the way, when the corporations basically invaded the universities, and it happened in the public schools in the 1920s, 35 years before official de facto, de jure desegregation. The middle class white high schools had declined so badly because of corporatism There's a great book written about it called Quackery in the Public Schools. Of course, it's out of print, but a white, wealthy New Hampshire businessman could not find a secretary, a literate secretary, from amongst the white graduating high school class, and he decided to investigate why that was the case. I think his name was Albert Lind, L-Y-N-D, and it's one of the greatest books ever written, but it's proof that the blacks and the minorities did not dumb down the schools. The corporate interests dumbed them down starting in the late 1920s. So it's all, I'll shut up now, but
no one is alive from the point of the 1920s, that was in high school, yeah. In the 1920s. They're not alive anymore.
No.
That generation is entirely gone.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, the big thing as far as schools go, you know, especially, you know, elementary through high school, it's let's create good little Walmart workers now. Well, I mean, before it was, yeah. Let's create good little factory workers, but now it's...
But all of the textbook companies, if you check into their backgrounds, are owned by the banks and the oil companies.
Yes.
Mm. That's who owns the textbooks.
Yeah, maybe Koch brothers, too. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I support Neil Postman made a push, I believe, in the early 90s to just get rid of textbooks.
You just need a piece of chalk and a slate, you know, blackboard.
Well, I mean, you could use primary source text, too. I don't know if you could teach an English class with chalkboard.
I don't think so. You have the classics.
And get rid of the schools of education, period. The master's programs in education. The rich have their children taught by people who haven't even graduated from college, for God's sake. So, anyway... Bob, thanks for your program. I tried to donate $5, and I'll do your listeners a favor. Jeff, who is very lovely, who's from Birmingham area, England, told me that if it's $5 or less, don't bother phoning in. Write a check and save the processing fees and mail it to the GPO, the box number that he gave me. Maybe you'd want to give that out to people to save Jeff and the people in the tally room trouble. If it's $5 or less, I literally have $7.37.
Well, I have a couple of people's names here who have been contributing that
anyway,
I'd like to read, if that's okay. Thank you very much,
good
Linda.
Thank you, Bob, and good night, Professor Duty.
Okay.
Thank you. Good night, Linda.
Gloria Victoria, thank you very much. I mean, I haven't even looked to see whether it's okay to read her name. Yes, it doesn't... usually there's a place where you can... where is the indication of whether or not it's okay to read the person's name on the air? Does
right.
it say? Oh, yeah. And she says yes. Okay. Oh, thank you very much, Gloria Victoria McAdams. And here's someone from the Bronx whose name we can't read. Thank you very much, nonetheless. Here's someone who doesn't indicate either way whether it's okay. I'll take a chance and mention their name as J.M. of Freeport. Thank you very much. And let's see. There's another name. Doesn't say yes or no. Someone from Howard Beach.
Lillian
from Howard Beach. Thank you very much. And
people
here, somebody else who doesn't indicate. This could be, this is someone from East 190th Street. Alan from East 190th Street. Thank you very much. And, a doctor... Joseph Hederman, someone who does the Lord's work. Thank you very much, Dr. Hederman, and I'll be calling you.
He's been a volunteer here answering calls.
He has. When did this happen?
A few years ago. I remember. He was here. He helped fix my arm, not my sling.
Well, thank you very much. There's one more... you see, and we're not allowed to mention this Gloria's name, but it's Gloria from 21st Street. Thank you very much. I hope I haven't given too much of your identity away. But thanks very much to the people who've been pledging to support WBAI. Thanks very much to the people who've been calling with comments about the occupation of Wall Street. And we have the tally organizer, Andrew
Bell.
Andrew Bell, who's come in to straighten us all out.
With an iron hand, no doubt. I am a Tallahassee, Florida native who grew up with two parents born in the city of Moultrie, Georgia. That's Colquitt County, for those who probably will not take the time to Google it. It's a town that is now about 30,000 strong, if that. Working class, about 10 or 12 traffic lights, 10 roofs to this day, and maybe one or two horses here and there. The Occupy Wall Street demonstration and movement, as it's beginning, has struck a deep curiosity with me because I had my parents tell me of the movements they were a part of in the late 50s and early 60s, the movements my grandparents, to my surprise, as I learned, were not happy about them participating in. My mother, who stands at about 5'7 or 5'8, sewed pockets into the insides of her coats along with friends to store toothbrush and toothpaste because they knew immediately that they would be harassed, if not beaten, hosed, or bitten by police dogs and arrested and detained for some time for protesting for books. That's B-O-O-K-S. So when I pass some folks, as much as I agree with them and want to support their effort, occupying a public space, I wonder whether they have the gumption and the intestinal fortitude to go into harm's way as much as my mother and to get in the faces of those who would, who are prepared and trained to shoot them to get what it is they deserve.
Well, we're going to find out in a couple hours.
Yeah.
Don't talk with your mouth full.
Well, what's going to happen to the books at the library there?
Is there a sense down there that these folks are ready to withstand beatings?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Some of them have multiple times.
Yeah.
What happened to the library books is we put them in storage because nobody has much use for soggy library books.
That's a good thing. I saw all those books.
Would you talk about the diversity ethnically, culturally at Zuccotti Park, Liberty Park?
No.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Culturally, there's a lot of diversity. Ethnically, we're trying to get more diversity than we've had. We have outreach groups that are going out to Harlem daily that are going out to other more diverse areas. It's been fairly diverse so far, but not as diverse as it probably should be, given...
Well, significantly more so than the Tea Party, at least. So we got that.
When you organize with social media, you're kind of limited to people who have cell phones, aren't you? Or computers, right?
To an extent, but I mean, nowadays...
We do a lot of flyering on the subway, buses, public transport of all...
Yeah, our arts and culture thing, they did a big thing, I think Wednesday, where they were riding around the subway, sort of spreading the message for like half the day.
Why, after 20-plus days, do you think you have to have people going out in order to help diversify ethnically?
That's a really good question. I mean, we've had them. I mean, these didn't just start yesterday. From about end of the first week, we've had working groups organized to do specifically that. I'm not really sure why exactly we've had to do that.
Well, I think part of it also is just the sort of location that it is in. I mean, I visited a friend of mine up in Midtown where he works, and you know, there's a fair number of people that I've seen that, you know, don't really know about what's going on, you know, downtown.
In your personal social circles, how many would you how would you describe the diversity in your social circles?
Pretty diverse. I mean, you know, I've got plenty of different friends of many ethnic backgrounds.
And where you go to school,
I'm from
Flint. You go to school, you get to see
Flint,
a lot of people.
Yes,
I mean, Baruch College is the most ethnically diverse college in the country, and I've been there for 4 years, so I've definitely, I mean, I have more diverse palette of friends, I suppose, now than I used to. I mean, I grew up in upstate New York in Saratoga Springs, and Saratoga Springs is probably about 98% white, so I just didn't meet that many people until I came to the city, but I've never found that I had much issue with, you know, cultural barriers. Language barriers sometimes.
Well, let me turn the question around to you. Why would you say that there is not a more diverse population in the street?
Well,
because these economic issues certainly are weigh down just as heavily on everyone.
Sure.
And as a matter of fact, much more heavily on the so-called minorities.
You need something like an institution that would get them to
In
that
full honesty,
them.
I have not stopped more than 10 minutes at Liberty Park / Zuccotti Park. The sound of it has not inspired me. I certainly agree with people standing up for what they believe in and demonstrating. And I certainly want anyone who deserves what they're entitled to get in the faces of those who are keeping them from having it. I think the diversity disparity has to do with a psychological malaise. There are people in this country who, since 1607 or 1609, forgive me if I'm getting the date wrong, have been oppressed since the beginning, who were intended to occupy a certain rung of a social class and have been held there since that arrival here in 1607 or 1609. You can say that they were emancipated, which in the context of the time meant not being freed, but being moved from private property to government property, if you check the 13th Amendment. And then with the Voting Rights Act here, with the democracy, you have folks who have to have their right to vote renewed on a regular basis. I think that marching and demonstrating has been done so many times and again that certain folks in my generation, I have brown skin for those who can't see me out there in the listening audience, are quite fed up with demonstrating, and who are quite tired of being shot and having dogs sicked on them and being hosed and want to see, well,
how many
what can you produce?
How many times have you been in the street trying to change things?
The first time I marched down Fifth Avenue when I got to New York was after Sean Bell had been shot. This is an unarmed person more than 50 times by uniformed NYPD police officers. I was ready to be arrested. I was ready to be beaten because my last name is Bell. I was 23 when he was 23. I was minding my own business the night when he was minding his own business. And it occurred to me that I had an, for the sake of radio, ever-loving bullseye on the back of my neck. And so I rattled the barricades on Fifth Avenue. And I pointed my finger at every single one of those brown-skinned cops that they specifically put out. There was not one white-skinned police officer on Fifth Avenue that day, if anyone was there. They were all brown-skinned, and I made sure to point them out and say, it could have been you. And there are instances when I've been in New York in the last 6 years when it was a brown-skinned police officer who got shot in uniform or plain clothes by their fellow officers.
Desmond Robinson comes to mind.
Exactly. So I have been in the streets. I have rattled the cages. And you know what? They did not have the guts to arrest me because they knew that what I was saying was righteously indignant. Now, I have been detained multiple times because of my civil unrest. When the RNC was in town, I protested on behalf or demonstrated on behalf of certain progressive political candidates and certain social movements in the city. I know what it's like to spend a few nights in the Tombs or in some desolate holding cell in the back of some police precinct, because these people don't, in uniform, who are only empowered when they have guns in their hands, think that they have the right to push you around and speak to you any kind of way, and that you have to take this kind of crap off of them. So I'm not coming from some place where I haven't had to endure the BS that these people get away with, these people being the NYPD officers who claim to, you know, have courtesy, protection, and respect, which is crap, pissiness, and disregard, if I could, you know, rearrange the acronym. What I'm saying is I will mobilize behind my brothers and sisters in Zuccotti Liberty Park if they are ready to really shut something down. I'm not going to start all over again and reinvent the wheel protesting. My parents got the Voting Rights Act passed. My grandparents stopped lynching. My great-grandparents emancipated themselves, okay? I'm not going to go sit in a public park night after night. What I'm ready to do is shut it down.
If I could make a statement in regards to that, what we've been doing for the last 3 weeks has been mostly a media outreach and number-building exercise. We have not had the numbers in the past 3 weeks, except for possibly the union march last Wednesday, where we could actually shut down one of the banks. We haven't had the numbers across the country where we could shut down one of the banks. This Saturday, that is one of the things we are planning to do, is to picket J.P. Morgan Chase for an extended duration of time. We have a couple hundred solidarity protests across the country which are going to do that at the same time. We're going to start hitting them where it hurts. And I wouldn't be surprised if the police presence, the police action escalates as a result of that.
No doubt that it will. And I certainly want to reemphasize the fact that I stand in solidarity with those in Zuccotti Liberty Park. What I want to ask is, are those who are there willing to reduce their consumption? As it is obvious that as soon as you spend a dollar here or there in a restaurant or for clothing, anything, that business pays taxes to the American government, which is controlled by the people on Wall Street that we want to depose. Is there a plan in place, or is there going to be a plan in place to keep these people from feeding the machine that is the warmongering hegemon that is the global oppressor?
I'm going to leave it at that and answer some of the other calls. That's quite a good question to
We are going to bring people over to credit unions. Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
This is attracting worldwide attention. It's spreading. It's not just one park and one up. One up. That's what's different about this. It seems.
You're on the radio. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Bob. Can you hold 1 second? I'm going to turn this radio down. Hello, the young man has his point of view, but I find it offensive that he is the chosen one to speak on behalf of blacks of his age or his ilk or whatever. Wait a minute, let me make my point. My point is the reason there are not a lot of blacks down there is simply because when groups gather together, as I've seen in the last 45, 50 years, the police can't beat up their own cousins and uncles and daughters' children. They generally, the first thing they do is break for the black people. So I'm warning any brothers down here, don't you ever disillusion yourself that you're just like the rest of them. Because the police need a whipping boy, and generally the blacks are. Young man, may I ask you a question?
I'm listening.
Okay. Tell me your background.
I was born and raised in Tallahassee, Florida. My father is a minister, Princeton educated. My mother has 3 degrees. And I was raised as something akin to a Huxtable kid, but with a street edge. I am very proud to be someone who is conscious and wearing brown skin. I'm proud of my heritage. I know where I come from. That is literally my heritage, which goes back to Ghana and Ethiopia, and of course, the lineage, you know, branches off in a few other places. And I guess that answers your question.
Okay, my why I ask you that is a lot of the advocate, a lot of the disenfranchised, a lot of disgruntled blacks that are older, younger, etc., generally are more angry because they fit the mold of what whites have claimed they wanted blacks to represent, and they were somehow disillusioned when it came to getting an equal opportunity. Did you experience that?
Certainly. I grew up in a southern town that is now probably as large as 300,000, where folks believe that they are open-minded and liberal, but have not traveled outside of the city limits, the county limits, the state limits, or the boundaries of the contiguous U.S. And so, in a sense, or in a word, they just aren't hip. They don't know what's up.
Now, lastly, before I hang out, and thank you, Bob, for this opportunity, because generally we as blacks, a lot of my people call themselves African-American. I prefer blacks because I grew up in this country. And black, the term black connotates a certain pride in just being. Anyway, why I ask these questions is we can't let this young cat go away thinking that the world is against him. Bob, if I were you, I would also sympathize with him and speak honestly on how you feel about what he has said. And if in any way with your wisdom, you might be able to direct him into a more constructive, positive.
Well, I doubt very much that I have anything to, you know.
All right. Thank you very much.
Pass on to him, except to say that everyone operates from their own particular spot. Where they are at the moment, this caller is from, as far as I know, a long history of having been involved in demonstrations. And I think he put his finger on why, unless people of color go there in massive numbers, they would be singled out, and they would be subjected to the worst of the police brutality.
Oh, hello, Bob?
Yes, you're still there.
Yeah, I would like to say one other thing. And this is to all the blacks that, and trust me, we all love the people. I among people like myself, appreciate what's going on. But the fact is that the left can also put a dagger in your back at a certain time. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, the thing is that they have to be aware that it's not fair. As my old country grandmother used to say, you can't do like white folks do. And you read the papers and you see the Negroes that in politics or whatever get busted, and what's the first thing they say? The white folks do it and get away. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. You know, we're getting close to the time when we have to get out of here at 3 o'clock. I think Ibrahim Gonzalez is coming in. You're on the radio. You're on the radio. Hello?
Hey. Hi, I'm Amir.
Yes, you're on here.
Hey, it's Franlock. How you doing, Bob?
Oh, Franlock. Hi, Fran. How you doing?
I'm okay. Getting over a bad coughing virus, but I'm fine. I tried to get home after working at BAI this evening and couldn't do it. I had to go over to Liberty Park. And I had earlier attended a General Assembly there. And I have to say that the level of organization under the kind of duress that is happening tonight was impressive.